have some chicken tendies and a brew dog. It's If You're Listening, one person's mission to force her friend to listen to all the music he avoided in high school. I'm Ramsey.
Hey, it's me, Heather.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I made a tactical error in eating popcorn as a snack earlier.
So is your mouth just full of leftover kernels?
Oh, I ate it like 4 hours ago, and I
doesn't
guess I know, it's just my curse for the rest of the day. I thought I was in the clear.
No, I had corn on the cob last night. I have brushed and flossed since then and still found corn in my tooth earlier today.
We're just a couple of corn mouths.
Is that a thing?
It is now. It's the hashtag for this episode that everyone's using.
I hate it. Ramsey, we have a guest today. Thank God. No one else wants to hear about corn in our teeth.
You do. Ladies and gentlemen, today we have a writer and a podcaster. You know him from Doughboys, How Did This Get Played, Earth to Ned, the new show on Disney Plus. It's Nick Weiger.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, Nick Weiger.
Thanks for having me. I can talk corn teeth all day if we want to go down that road.
How long do you estimate corn kernels are stuck in your teeth after you eat?
So for me, I am a big time flosser. Mm-hmm. And so I will, I just can't stand that. In fact, to the point where I will have if I'm working a job, I'll keep some floss in my drawer, or in my bag. In the car, I'll keep some floss. I need it with me because I just like that irritant will just drive me nuts and will be all I'll focus on. And, you know, Ramsey had a couple of Doughboys references earlier on the show, which I appreciate. But one thing I've talked about on Doughboys, my chain restaurant podcast, is that I'm not a popcorn fan at all. And part of the reason is it's just I just can't stand having popcorn kernels either stuck between my teeth or even just that, like, when the granules kind of get stuck to your molars, that also drives me nuts.
I love popcorn so much. It is like one of my, well, not now in COVID times, but like going to a bar that serves popcorn in New York and just having like a shitty beer and a like unlimited popcorn for dinner is like a very common meal of mine. Nutritional value real low, but happiness very high. Nick, do you want to tell everyone what album we're doing today?
Today we will be discussing Metallica's Ride the Lightning, their second studio album, released in 1984.
Okay, the year of my birth.
Hey, there you go.
Big year, big year. Also, the year of Ramsey's birth?
That's right.
Wow.
okay, so I looked up this album. I know nothing about this album. I am obviously familiar with Metallica, but not this album. I am curious why you picked this album.
Thank you for asking. So basically, the arc of Metallica is they had their thrash metal phase over the course of their first four albums. This was their second of those four albums. And that's like what the core fans refer to as kind of the original four.
Okay.
And then they had their album, their self-titled album, Metallica, also known as the Black Album, with the big single was Enter Sandman.
Yep.
But they had a bunch, you know, The Unforgiven, Nothing Else Matters, Wherever I May Roam. Like a lot of those all came from that album.
Wow, and that's a lot.
Yeah, they had like five or six just huge singles off of that album. And that's what really, you know, catapulted them to mainstream success. And at the same time, kind of created a schism within their fan base where their original hardcore fans who'd been with them, even though their sound was still pretty similar to what they had, it was like a little bit less thrash and a little bit like slower and a little bit more accessible. And so a lot of core fans, myself included to some degree, were like kind of like, oh, that's when Metallica started to, get off of what they were doing that got us into the band in the first place. But Ride the Lightning came right in that Kill 'Em All was their first album, Master Puppets their third album. A lot of people think Master Puppets is their best album. I like And Justice for All, which is their fourth album, but I chose Ride the Lightning because this is an album that I think just like works top to bottom and has so many tracks that I think are like, so many tracks that I think like endure. Okay. So yeah, it's like kind of like they really like refined their sound. Their Kill 'Em All is just so raw, and then Ride the Lightning and Master of Puppets, I feel like, is where they really kind of got their sound down and their songwriting really dialed in. And I guess as a Metallica fan, this is the album that I would pick because I think it kind of represents the Metallica of old in the best of their catalog.
This is okay. So this is very interesting to me because if you had asked me, like, what year did Metallica put out? I guess you're saying, wait, what album was Enter Sandman on? You said
The album's just called Metallica. People call it the Black Album as well.
And so, what year was that album? 91.
Yeah. Okay.
So I definitely, in my like recollection of like this band in pop culture, would have thought that album was way later, because I feel like those songs were like so ubiquitous for all of the 90s, and the fact right. that it was so early is yeah. very interesting to me.
Yeah, huh. I mean it was basically, you know, that I think there was also a longer tail for things, you know, like the singles just kept coming out, you know, years after the album's release, and so it was just kind of in the collective consciousness for a long time. But it was, yeah, and also it kind of, it's weird because it was kind of like the, in some ways that album was kind of the end of metal, even though it was the biggest mainstream success. It was like after that, it was, we kind of went into, pivoted to grunge.
Yeah.
And then without, you know, in a blink of an eye, we're in the rap rock, and it was just like, you know.
What a time to be alive that was.
Yeah, exactly. It yep. was a time to be alive. That is true.
It was, in fact. Ramsey is a huge Limp Bizkit fan.
Wow.
That's not true.
No, I will not let that stand. You've said far worse lies about me. I will not allow that.
I did make Ramsey at some point listen to a Korn album. He did not enjoy that either. Okay, this is very interesting. I would have shifted all of Metallica's career basically at least 5 years further, like back than I thought it was.
Yes,
interesting. Here.
So how did you come to be a Metallica fan?
It was a lot of little brother with an older brother. Like my older brother, Nate, 5 years younger than me, super into metal. All his fans were into metal, and I thought that was cool, and I wanted to like wear his shirts and be into that too. So that's basically what it came from. It was a younger sibling's mimicry.
Hmm. Perfect. Makes perfect sense. And do you like other, this is metal, right? Yeah. Do you like other metal or just Metallica?
I was into metal. I, as far as my listening these days, I don't really keep up with metal, but I, you know, the stuff of my youth, I was certainly into, you know, Megadeth, uh-huh. your Anthrax, your Slayers, the kind of the heavy hitters of the, of metal, Sepultura.
Yeah. We just did an Anthrax song on our episode that came out today because it was on a Tony Hawk Pro Skater soundtrack.
Wow.
So, yeah. It's, you know, it was very, very important to skating.
very eclectic album.
Yeah. It's a really crazy soundtrack. but yeah. Okay. That is interesting. So yeah, cause this being 1984, I mean, I know what Metallica sounds like. Does this sound like the MTV songs I would know?
I think I think you'll be able to recognize it. Yeah. James Hetfield's, who's the lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist, has such mm-hmm. a distinct, you know, the sound to his voice that I think that makes it sound like Metallica. But you know, it's a little faster, it's a little less produced.
Yeah.
But I don't think you'd be like, I think if you were like, who is this? And someone's like Metallica, you'd be like, oh yeah, you know.
Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. Right. That is, yeah. All right. Go ahead, Ramsey.
Oh, I did some quick prep in advance of the episode to try and think of like, what are the Metallica touch points in my life that I'm just going to throw out real quick.
Okay. Great.
Like ignoring like the very, I do know some of the singles and that sort of thing. My friend Ronald was sued by Metallica.
Excuse me?
What?
For downloading, he was very early on Napster. And
oh,
he got,
with this part of the Napster debacle.
He got caught. He used his real email address and address to sign up for a Napster account. And he was served by papers.
Wow.
From the Metallica estate or whatever.
Did he have to like go to court? What happened? So, I got an assist one time, and that was scary enough.
I think it was effectively that because he was a minor, and so I think I think it just turned into the larger Napster lawsuit.
Yeah.
Rather than suing the individuals who were sharing right. Metallica songs.
I did but go to a college with a kid who did get individually sued, not from Napster, but some from some later like file sharing situation. But I got kicked off of Napster for downloading a BB Mac song. So not the same at all. Just, you know, I think British pop music. Interesting. I got a cease and desist later, like when I was on college campus for downloading the television show Friday Night Lights, which honestly, I don't regret a fucking thing. Was worth it. it's fine. Yeah, I forget about that whole Napster thing. Like that was, I mean, didn't work. So, it didn't work. So,
yeah, I mean, But Napster is specifically with Metallica was such a moment where where they were just like, oh, they're not cool anymore. They become the machine. They become right. the man.
Yeah.
And to your point, Heather, of like how it seemed like Metallica's album, like it seemed like that came out later in the 90s. So it's such a part of the 90s. It's interesting how the timeline is so compressed between yeah. like that, you know, that album comes out. That's 91. They're huge mainstream success. They're one of the biggest bands in the world, winning Grammys. Then they come out with Load, their next album, like 5 years later. And there's a huge backlash to that by their fans. Any fans who stuck with them through Metallica started to get off board with Load. They release a Reload the next year. And then that's similarly like people are just sort of like, what the fuck is this? And then they have in, you know, just a couple years later, they have the Napster controversy, and that's right. the point where just like a lot of fans just completely who ultimately came back to the band but they checked out at that point and were like fuck this.
But then I do remember but then the documentary was after that, right? And people really yeah. liked that in my recollection. Yes.
Some Kind of Monster. So that yeah. documentary is awesome, and I think that honestly did have to do with their image being rehabbed a little bit with their fan base.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but I know it's like always highly ranked as like great music documentaries. So, yeah.
It's great. And you know what? Part of why I think like, you know, I like Metallica for the music primarily, mm-hmm. but being a fan of the band, you follow some of the intrigue, and there's a lot of intrigue that touches a lot of different aspects of the metal genre involving Metallica specifically. One is that Dave Mustaine, who's the front man of Megadeth, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, maybe arguably number two to Metallica in terms of their prominence and influence in the genre. Yeah. He was originally a member of Metallica and got kicked out after Kill 'Em All because he was such an awful drunk and they just didn't want to be around him.
Oh wow!
So he basically and in Some Kind of Monster, they have like an on-screen discussion with Dave Mustaine, and Dave Mustaine is so like he's just so devastated by being even though he built his own thing and yeah. became this huge like star in his own right within the genre, he's just still so devastated and crushed by being kicked out of the band, and he's never wow. really come to terms with it. So that's one aspect. The other thing, and I'll just monologue for one more second here, which ties in to this album to some degree, is Cliff Burton, their original bassist. Died tragically in a tour bus accident after the Master of Puppets, their album following this.
Right.
So Cliff Burton, who's an amazing bassist, he's on the first three albums, and then he was replaced by Jason Newsted, and then Jason Newsted, who is also great, but kind of always felt a little bit, it seemed, maligned and isolated within the group.
Sure.
He ultimately departs the band, and that's what ends up being the inception of the inciting incident within Some Kind of Monster. Is they're looking for a replacement now for Jason Newsted.
Oh, got it. Yeah, I mean, the main things that I did know about Metallica were that they had, to be fair, I don't think I knew it was a bassist, but a member that died in a bus crash or whatever.
Yeah.
And the Napster thing. Those were my main talking points about them. So interesting.
Right.
In Sweden. Yeah. Sorry, I'm on Wikipedia now.
It was like you just divined that information.
No, that's just a weird place to, I don't know, do anything, in my opinion. But like, that's random. All right, Ramsey, would you like
album art? Yes,
I meant to send it to you a minute ago. I'm sorry. I'm doing a bad job. Here you go. One thing I will tell while that's sending, while I was looking for the album art in which to send, I found the album art in board shorts form on billabong.com, and they are fucking insane. It's literally the sky and lightning on the front, and it just says Metallica in that font across the ass.
Fuck, I would have loved to have those in middle school.
Well, you can get them right now for $69.
Oh my god.
Nice. Wow. You know what? That's way too expensive.
You're paying for the logo.
It's that true.
So expensive. I don't
is
know how much
chair on there
is. The what
is the chair on the shorts somewhere? What's the placement of that?
No chair.
Okay.
It's literally the front is just the lightning sky. So mm-hmm. That's kind of a cool thing. There's a pocket. I don't know why you need a pocket when you're swimming. That has the little logo on it. And then just huge Metallica across your butt in that blue. I don't know how much men's swim trunks cost, but $69 seems very expensive.
Yeah, that seems a little much. I did have a very Metallica-heavy wardrobe in middle school. I wore a lot of, you know, I had a Ride the Lightning shirt. I borrowed my brother's Master of Puppets shirt. I borrowed his Metallica, Black Album shirt. And a lot of there were also a lot of just cool designs that had skulls and gore on them that I just thought were awesome. I haven't thought about this for a long time, but the artist behind a lot of that Metallica art and a lot of mm-hmm. other metal art is this guy who went by Pusshead.
Oh,
yeah. I gotta look up Pusshead.
Yuck.
Yeah. Really gross.
Don't love that. Ramsey, what are your thoughts on this cover?
So, I mean, you've done a great job of describing it through board shorts. the notable omission is, but above Ride the Lightning, there's a big electric chair.
Powered by lightning, not by air. By lightning.
Yeah. And it just immediately makes me wonder, was that already slang for somebody who's about to be put to death?
Oh.
This guy's going to ride the lightning?
Mm.
Or if that was just their own sort of creation based on this title.
My understanding is it came from The Stand.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. I did see which that I haven't in read. My research. No, I have not read that either.
It was 8 million pages, so I don't remember that.
There's a lot of horror references, a lot of high fantasy references that you'll come across in metal.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, part of why the fan base is so dorky, myself included.
Yeah,
I would say other than just doing a straight up black album cover, which is, I guess, to come, this is like a quintessential Metallica cover to my mind.
Sure.
What I would expect.
I do hate that Ride the Lightning is just like in Ariel. It just feels like, oh, right, we have to put the title somewhere is what that feels like. But everything else feels fine. But also, my mind literally gets blown when I think about how graphic design was done before Photoshop, and I literally can't understand it. Like, I don't understand mass production of, like, I went to art school, I don't understand it, and it hurts my brain to, like, I've seen I went to a panel once where it was like the guy who shot like the cover of like Morrison Hotel and like other multiple Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and just like all, you know, the different iterations of those people's bands, and like shot all those early album covers, and then worked with a guy who did the graphic design. And I'm like, how did you do that? I have grown up too much with computers that I can truly not understand how you did it. But anyways, so I'm not going to give him too much shit for using the most boring font ever for the album title. Should we get into this?
Let's do it.
All right. This is not what I expected the album to start like.
Well, so there's a lot of, you know, we'll see this with Metallica, or you'll hear this with Metallica, you'll hear this in this album too, but they have a lot of acoustic that they'll use either as interludes or as intros, or sometimes just do a wholly acoustic song.
now that you said about metal fans being nerdy, which I do also know to be true, and it's not a slight, I am a huge nerd about many different things. Metal is just not one. There is also the like, I mean, what that noise was reminding me of is also like the sort of fantasy nerdy elements of stuff. Yeah, like,
there's so for many
Tolkien bands and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. This is what I was expecting.
Yeah. This sounds like Metallica.
I have not listened to a specifically metal album in so long. This is fascinating.
What's the name of the song?
This is Fight Fire with Fire.
Yeah. Because I grew up like going to punk shows, like hardcore is more adjacent to that than metal.
Got it.
So I feel like, obviously it's not, they're different genres, but they're not too dissimilar. But I feel like the big difference that's sticking out in my head right now listening to this is how clean and precise metal is, whereas hardcore, I feel like, is louder and messier, if that makes sense.
I think that's I know less about hardcore than you, but I have been to my share of punk shows, and I was into punk for a time, and I think there is a level of precision and a skill ceiling, an expected skill floor rather, for musicianship in metal,
which I feel like does tie back, and again, like I do not mean this as an insult. I know this word is inherently usually an insult, but like I do feel like that also ties into like the nerdiness of this genre of like being so skilled at it, you know?
Right. Hitting those
gyms. I mean, a lot of it, this was it would be a kid who would, I knew an amazing guitarist, I had a good friend who was an amazing guitarist in high school, and like a lot of, he was just like sitting by himself, noodling on his guitar on his lap like all day long after school. And I think that was a lot of, I think that's where a lot of metal guitarists came from, just people who just like practiced obsessively and maybe that was their outlet.
That makes sense.
I was the kid in college who, I was a little bit ahead of the ukulele wave.
Sorry, go on.
I don't know if I want to go on.
That was, I don't even know. I couldn't even, okay, continue. Sorry.
I was into This American Life before it was cool. And so I did the thing of like, oh, I'm going to teach myself like Crazy Train on this. That'll be fun. And I got that riff down. And then I was like exploring more metal things. And it was just, oh, this is far too hard to learn. Don't understand how anyone could do this. And I have two less strings.
I don't know. One time ever I tried to learn how to play guitar. And after with like my friend, and after 5 minutes, I was like, my fingers hurt. I hate this. I don't want to do this anymore. So I have no tolerance for any of it. So it's all shocking to me that anyone wants to do this.
Yeah. Especially
this sounds crazy.
100%. Yeah. Like, and the guitarist for this
are insane.
Yeah, and that's Lars Ulrich. I mean, Lars is, you know, for his, despite his late career infamy as the, Napster guy, he was an amazing drummer. And I think you'll hear on this album, you'll hear a lot is just like the snare drum just really, really comes through. It's just really, really high in the mix. But also just like the speed required to be a metal drummer is just, the double bass drum is just like, it's requires so much coordination and so much skill. I was going to say the new guitarist on this album after Dave Mustaine's departure, Kirk Hammett, is, and he's still with the band, and he's just, awesome. Especially his soloing is just like so virtuosic.
It's so funny that, like, granted, part of it is just there were less bands and this band was always on MTV. Like, I know all these names despite never having been, like, a Metallica fan. But they were just so everywhere that I have known every member of Metallica's name that you have said so far. never listened to them.
Lars was the only one I probably could have named without prompting. But I've definitely heard all these others.
I think I could have also pulled James and Cliff with you know, if we were at Metallica trivia night, as you and I were.
I think Lou Reed also, right? He's in Metallica.
they did an experimental thing together, right?
Yeah,
I'm trying to remember what that was.
Oh, I was I was going to ask because I saw on Wikipedia Associated at Lou Reed, and I was like, excuse me?
Yeah, they had a collaboration that I've never really listened to later in Metallica's run. Like I kind of fell off with Metallica as they got into their modern catalog, which is, you know, I think common for a lot of people following a band as a kid. They did some more experimental things. I think the thing they've done that's like that, that's worked better is S&M, which they did two of. They actually recently did S&M 2, and which was their live performance with the San Francisco Symphony. And I think those are actually really awesome. They're really cool live performances.
Interesting. So this album is also only 8 songs long.
Oh, wow.
The songs are very long, though, which I feel like is pretty normal for metal.
100%, yeah.
That ties into one of my other Metallica memories, which is my cousin getting married and slow dancing to Nothing Else Matters, and it feeling like an eternity. They played the entire song.
People need to really think about that at weddings. Like, no one wants to watch you dance for that long. That's so awkward.
Unless you're really good.
Yeah, unless you have a dance routine done. Right.
But then you don't want that to feel too rehearsed, because then that feels like corny in its own way.
Yeah, The Office.
It's tough.
The Office made that cool and then also ruined it 3 years later when everyone did it too much. Like, it was like cool for 1 minute and then it was like, okay, everyone's doing this. Everyone calm down. Yeah. No, I feel like the sweet spot is like 1 minute and then you make everyone else join you. Like, no, I don't want anyone looking at me. I hate that.
Is this still the first song?
This is the second song. We're in Ride the Lightning. This is the title track right now, and this is one of their tracks that I feel like has endured from this album.
What is your favorite on this album, Nick?
Great question. For a long time, I would have said Fade to Black, rather, or For Whom the Bell Tolls. I did have a period where I was really into Escape, which is kind of a deeper cut, and I think that was partly me wanting to be like, I'm the guy who's into the deeper cut. but it is still a good song. I think Creeping Death is really awesome too. Towards the end, I mean, I like Ride the Lightning a lot too. I think it's a good album from start to finish. There aren't really any of the 8 songs that I feel like are a drag to sit through.
Do you go back to this album with any frequency?
Yeah, I mean, this is I don't have necessarily a regular rotation, but if I want to listen to something that's going to get my energy up, for sure, I'll listen to one of the Metallica original 4 albums.
All right.
This might be a sad question for the current quarantine period, but did you get to see them live?
Yeah, I've seen Metallica live. I've seen them a couple of times. I saw them once at the Velodrome at Cal State Dominguez Hills. It was a good show. I mean, they were I'm trying to remember what year it was. Maybe it would have been 92. So I think they were touring off still touring off of Metallica, that album.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I've seen him another time too. I don't remember, the details are a little foggier, but I've seen him a few times.
I would imagine their stage show is out of fucking control. Like, I don't go to many like big shows. I go to mostly like shitty DIY shows, but every time I go to like a show in an arena, I'm always like, oh my god, this is amazing. People do this, and I would imagine theirs is even on like a different level of like pyrotechnics and shit. I don't know.
Yeah, this was an outdoor show, so it wasn't as I think the one that was the wildest in that regard that I ever saw was Rush. I saw Rush at the Anaheim Pond, and that was pretty nutso. But I remember this being a really good set. I remember, two things stand out. One is that Alice in Chains was supposed to be their opener, and then they dropped out, I think because Lane Staley, the singer, rest in peace, had to go to rehab. And so they got replaced by Candlebox.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. Do you remember? Do you guys remember Candlebox at all?
I do. I don't know why, though.
I know the name for some reason.
They were like a one. They were in that MTV era. They had like one hit in the grunge era.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly. And so they were there and they were opening for Metallica and just like not a great fit. It was like having Toad the Wet Sprocket open for Slayer. It was just like, it was just the wrong ensemble for that crowd. And so people were fucking just like so mean to them, just flipping them off, throwing shit at them. And I just remember them playing their hit and the singer singing a line from their hit song, which I can't even remember what it was. And then dodging a beer bottle and then saying, nice throw, asshole. And then going right into the next line of the song.
I mean, fuck it's it.
A pretty great way to handle it.
Yeah.
Yeah. If I played the song, I feel like I'd be like, oh yeah, I do remember this, but I could not tell you what it is offhand.
I don't even remember what it was called.
Far Behind, it looks like, from my Googling. Okay. I don't know. There's a couple. I can't tell which is the most popular one, but
I hear a bell tolling, so I have a pretty good indicator.
Yes, this is For Whom the Bell Tolls. This is the third track, and this is taken from a Hemingway novel, I believe.
Yep.
To where me and my friends like read this novel. We're like reading this Hemingway novel because of its association with Metallica, just to try to glean some insight into the song. But you know, a lot of their themes, it's thematically, I like I think back to the, because a lot of this was wrapped up in the metal scare of just like, oh, this is demonic, this is evil, parents want to keep their kids away from it. But a lot of Metallica's lyrics are like anti-war, anti-nuclear proliferation, anti-death penalty. It's like, and the same sort of thing happened with Ozzy and Black Sabbath, of just like their, you know, like a lot of their stuff was, I think it was Crazy Train was their single that people were like were saying like, oh, this is evil, this is the devil's music, but it's just a song about like how we should choose peace and love over war, you know?
Right.
So that kind of like that dissonance with the lyrical content and how the music sounds, its heaviness, I think is I don't know. I always find that aspect of metal interesting.
Also, though, isn't it cute now to listen to something like Crazy Train and be like, you guys were scared of this?
I know.
It's like adorable. You're like, okay, calm down.
It's like the thing I remember reading when I was a little bit more into music theory, and there was like the augmented fourth was called the devil's interval back in like the Middle Ages. It was like a thing you just would not play on the organ or you'd be scandalized.
Have you heard it, though? It is pretty scary.
It is pretty scary.
Yeah.
Just shivered thinking about it.
When I was in ninth grade, my English teacher tried to do the music is poetry angle.
Uh-huh.
And she played us the music video for One. I remember it being very long, but also had all this footage from this 1970s movie, which I Googled, called Johnny Got His Gun.
Yeah.
It really messed me up. I was really scared of that music video.
Well, because the movie, which is, it's like about a guy who goes to Vietnam, I think, and then he gets his, like, limbs blown off and is, like, you know, blind and deaf and can't communicate. And so it's just, like, this guy just trapped inside of a body he can't control. And it's just about his, like, agony and how, and it ends with, like, oh, please God, take, like, he wants to be killed. He's hoping for someone to kill him.
We watched it twice back to back, also, which didn't help.
Wow, interesting.
That was like,
what are you doing?
Well, I mean, that's 16 minutes or so, probably, of a lesson done.
Oh, your teacher was probably hungover in retrospect.
There was a rumor that she had a Megadeth tattoo as well, so this is all fitting.
Oh,
yeah.
This teacher rules.
I do think about how often now, like every time I watched a movie in school, I was like, was that teacher just hungover that day? Like,
Heather, as someone who went to punk shows, did you ever like see? I guess this is me just getting myself into this anecdote, but did you? But I was gonna say, like, I had a we went to a punk show once, and and then at school on the Monday after that punk show, our substitute teacher in history was the guitarist from that punk band. No, I was like, that was like the coolest thing I ever saw. I felt so in the know.
I also feel like that's a Southern California thing to happen, though. I can tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Did not happen in upstate New York. So Ramsey and I are both from upstate. But, I would mostly go to shows and all the bands were 15-year-olds, as was I.
Got it.
Most of our shows when I first started going to punk shows were in a basement under a business that was out of business called the Underground Theater. But it was basically like one of the kids in the punk scene. His dad, I think, was a real estate developer, a real estate agent, and would let us throw shows in places that, I don't know, for whatever reason, weren't selling or something. Like, we had the Underground Theater for a while, which was just, like I said, a basement. Then for a while, we had shows at a Chinese buffet that someone had gotten murdered at. And then...
Pretty metal.
Well, we also would have shows at the skate park. But yeah, this is like, adults were not going to these places.
Yeah.
Adults might wait in the parking lot for, you know, if they were a cool parent, for their teen to come out eventually. But no, I never saw a teacher, and I would have literally deceased. I would have died on the spot if I had seen a teacher at a show I went to.
Did that change your relationship with that teacher, Nick? Like, was there like a wink, or was it more averting your gaze?
So the band was called Action League, and I took it upon myself to go before school started and walk into the class and say, like, hey, with me and my friends, and we're like, hey, we couldn't help but notice you are the guy from Action League. And then he just sort of talked to us for a little bit. He was actually a little sheepish, and then in hindsight, it was just like, oh yeah, he was probably felt just so confused by the whole interaction / embarrassed to be a substitute teacher for some reason. I don't know what it was, but
you were like little teen Mike Wallace's confronting him in his office.
Exactly.
I mean, the idea still to me of seeing a teacher outside of school is crazy to me, but yeah. Like then doing a thing that I'm doing, oh, boy, that would blow my mind
even more. Yeah. They are the entertainment at the thing you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Was this band good?
I remember them being good, okay. But I think I saw them once. I remember them. It was at a ska punk show when they were one of the punk bands, the straight punk band.
So it would have been way worse if you were like, oh fuck, this band sucks. Like, my teacher's band is so bad.
Right.
That sounds like a YA novel.
Yeah, but then somehow they'd fall in love if it was a YA novel.
Oh, true.
This is
Fade to Black. Yeah. Yeah, and this is one we're hearing more of their acoustic song, the acoustic sound again. This one is also like, it has a heavier section that we're just about to get into. There we are. And it's like a, yeah, this song is very, very much like overtly about suicide. So, you know, for an angsty teen, this is like one that you just really, mm-hmm. I remember really connecting with. But it's a, yeah, I think this, I mean, I like the songwriting of this one, and you mentioned one, this has a similar sort of structure where it just kind of has this acoustic sort of lighter thing that goes into a heavier chorus and then kind of has a heavier section at the end.
My main memories of that song are like a really aggressive section that, that's my impression. And then a young boy saying, "Father," because he's trapped in his body.
The music video. I never loved, did you guys like the music videos where they'd have sound effects or I hate it too.
Yeah.
Get that out of there.
I don't want a video mix. Give me what the version I love.
No, honestly, give me the version, especially at that age, that I've listened to 400 times on repeat and know every note of. No, I didn't like it. Though I feel like I did like the videos that would do like the little, I don't know what to call it, skits at the beginning, sketch.
Sure.
You know, I feel like I'm saying those and it means funny, but like not, you know, it could be very serious. But then half the time they wouldn't show it on MTV anyways.
Right.
No one wants to watch that over, especially like TRL. They don't got time for that shit.
I just this weekend watched the music video for Yola Tango's Sugar Cube.
Never seen it.
Bob Odenkirk and David Cross are in it, and it's 70% just a Mr. Show sketch, and then the song occasionally appears in it.
Wow.
It's fun. Look, I'd recommend it.
I mean, that does sound like something Yola Tango would do, but interesting. No, I've never seen that, though. I miss music videos, though.
It was a cool era. I remember the... So Metallica had a music video after, I think, Enter Sandman was their lead single, and then they had The Unforgiven after was their second single, and then off of that album, the Metallica album. And I remember, like, hearing them, it's like, it's so weird to just think of, like, put yourself in the pre-internet mindset of, like, oh, they said on MTV they're going to be playing this video tomorrow at this time. Oh. So I've got to remember in my head to turn on the TV at this time so I can watch this video. But yeah, the Unforgiven, that second out, that track had a super duper long vignette, like a 9 minute vignette at the start before the actual song started. That of course they trimmed when they replayed it.
Also, like, I am a video producer and I work in advertising, and the budgets for music videos in the early 90s were bigger than any commercial budget I will ever have in my career. Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, can you imagine the budgets on these? Like, having a 9 minute vignette in the middle of a music video is insane.
Right.
Buying a car for Michael Jackson to destroy?
Dude. Music industry had so much money. It's nuts.
Yeah.
To be fair, they were selling albums then, too.
Well, you know, exactly. That's why Metallica was so mad they couldn't have 9 minute music videos anymore.
They knew it was coming.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, this is the first time I've thought about it, that how music videos definitely had higher budgets than my commercials.
I feel like anytime I've heard about a music video these days, it's like $7. Oh, the band. Yeah, you asked your director friend to direct it as a favor,
exactly.
And they got some GoPros and, you know, it's a completely different world.
Yeah.
Unless you're a huge artist.
Yeah, and even then, I still feel like, they'll get bigger music videos, but I feel like it's still not the same as it was in the early 90s.
Right.
Because there's no reason anymore.
Right.
I guess teens watch a lot of music on YouTube, which is very bizarre to me.
But if I can make, like, a lyric video for my new single, and it costs pennies on the dollar by comparison,
right?
Yeah.
I don't understand how any of it works anymore. Yeah, like, I want to know, like, what does the return on investment have to be for an artist to make a music video in 2020? Like, why would you do it versus not doing it? Because it does not seem fiscally sound to me, but I don't fucking know. I guess you call it more marketing at this point,
right? Like, If we do a video that's just as outrageous as the song WAP, then we're going to get so many hits.
We're going to get all this social media push about it, I guess, is more it than anything. Never mind, I answered my own question. It's social
media. We did it.
I got there. Thank you for working through this with me. I now understand how marketing and music works.
Yeah, please take a photo of your whiteboard so we can post it.
Jesus. That really, all right, great. I solved the puzzle.
Do either of you have any metal that you did like or were into or were even aware of outside of Metallica?
That's a good question. I would say the closest, and I know this isn't even actually metal. Like, does Nine Inch Nails even tangentially count?
I was into Nine Inch Nails at the same time I was kind of into metal. So, yeah, they're I mean,
I know
it's
more industrial,
its own thing.
But I feel like, because I don't think so. I cannot think of an example.
Right.
I'm trying to...
a difficulty of us recording this remotely now is that the second you asked that question, I turned into like the gritted teeth emoji. Just trying to think of what metal is. I guess like I feel like it would my exposure would be limited to like when an AC/DC song ended up on a top 40 station.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I know, obviously, like, the more classic bands, like Black Sabbath and stuff that we were talking about earlier, just from, like, my dad listening to it. But I am literally Googling metal bands now. And
yeah, can you tell that I looked at the A's on the list?
Yeah. But I am, like, I did love Slipknot's first album, if they count as a metal band. That's all I got from this list. Oh, this list says that Korn is metal, and I did love Korn. And oh, and System of a Down, do they count? I also love, you know, when that was big, I loved them.
I like System of a Down. I think nu metal counts as metal, so if you're that's absolutely valid.
If nu metal counts, yes, then because Korn was one of my first concerts in like eighth grade, and I saw them with Rob Zombie.
Wow.
And then, yeah, like System of a Down, I definitely listened to Slipknot, all of that type of stuff. And then I got into punk after that, basically.
Did you ever hop into Korn's chat room?
Absolutely.
On their
What? Okay.
Their website, they used to have a chat room that just like members of the band would pop into. And this was like Internet 1.0 day. This is the era of your friend, Ramsey, your friend, putting his real address into Napster, where you just log on and then just like it was like a very crude like chat app they'd have on there, and then Monkey would just be in there chatting with the fans.
Monkey, Ramsey's favorite member of Korn.
Right, of course.
One name I remember, yes.
No, the other name. Well, no, you always forget. But your actual favorite member is just David.
That's great. The outlier.
No, I didn't. I was not aware of that. To be fair, I don't think I got the internet at home until I wasn't into porn anymore.
Got it.
By design.
My parents were like, we're not getting her the internet until she's fucking done with this new metal. They heard the dashboard confessional and they're like, all right, let's get the dial up over here.
The pendulum swung too far in the opposite direction.
Yeah, now she's crying. Let's get something else.
I begged my dad to buy me the Green Day Dookie album and then cried when I heard a swear word, so I was not listening to any metal.
Oh my God.
It's true.
Yeah.
I really do feel like that story is the embodiment of the difference between you and I. Like, Rams, I got Green Day Dookie off of, like, Columbia Music, whatever the shit, and my parents did not give a shit, and I loved it. But then the only album my parents have ever banned me from having in my house was, like, an early Coolio album, because it was literally, like the song titles were explicit. Not even the song itself, so... Yeah, Green Day was not an issue for me.
Was there any band stuff in your house, Nick, in terms of music?
You mean like paraphernalia or posters, that sort of stuff?
I'm
things
sorry.
Things you were banned from listening to.
Oh, banned. BANNED.
Yeah, sorry.
no problem. Not really in my house. If there was stuff with swears, my parents would want me to listen to it with on headphones or with the door closed. You know, they were pretty tolerant of that sort of stuff. But I think I did have a friend whose family was evangelical, and he came upon an Eazy-E album that he was listening to.
Yeah.
And then his mom, like, he wasn't in trouble, but his mom was like, I'll buy this album off you for $5 if I can take it in the backyard and smash it with a hammer.
Wow.
And he took that deal.
Fair enough. As a kid, come on.
Yeah.
You don't have money.
So exactly. So we're listening to Escape now. This is one of the songs that I really like off of this album. It's kind of got you'll hear this major key chorus, which is kind of, honestly, like less of a, it sounds like something that would be more out of like almost maybe a little bit more prog rock than Metallica, but I really like it. But then the song we glossed over, the one before this, was Trapped Under Ice. which I'm sure is about something else, but I've always chose to imagine it of just being about being afraid of literally being trapped under ice, because I think that's more fun.
As two people who grew up on the East Coast, it's very scary. The idea
seems horrifying.
People who walk out on frozen, like, you know how in like the olden days people would ice skate on ponds? That sounds fucking terrifying to me. How do you know it's frozen enough? That's so scary. Yeah,
right.
Oh my God, I would be so scared to fall into water under ice.
There's like fishing cabins that people do. I don't understand how that works.
Too scary.
Yeah, way too scary.
Well, and Lars is from like, I don't know, somewhere very cold, right? Isn't he from like Scandinavia or something?
Yeah, he's Scandinavian. He's Danish, I believe.
Oh.
Probably a lot of ice there.
Right. Gotta be.
It's the land of ice and snow, I believe.
No. I don't want to. Being trapped under ice is definitely a fear. I don't like that one.
Yeah.
100%.
Because I'm already low-key scared of the water. Not like swimming, but like the ocean is scary. And so the idea of being like under frozen, oh no, I don't like that at all.
Would you rather be trapped under ice or buried alive?
Ooh. Damn. This is a hard one.
I think I'd go underwater because when you freeze to death, supposedly it's kind of you get warm before you die.
Oh, okay.
I also think you would die faster.
Good point.
I don't actually know that, but I feel like you would die faster frozen under, like, because you would drown as opposed to suffocating. I don't know. I guess drowning and suffocating are pretty fucking similar. I think I would rather be underwater than in the earth.
There's something about
bugs.
Right. I totally. I think you make the strong case. I think that's probably the correct option.
the correct answer. Yeah. It's a great answer
for this grim exercise.
Yeah.
There is something uniquely horrifying about being able to like look through the ice at the world above.
Yeah.
That seems very, very scary.
I will say, in the version of this that I was picturing in my head, it was night. So
okay.
I don't know. I feel like maybe I was making it slightly better in my head by it being dark out.
I don't know. The panic of like, I'm not going to be able to see any light no matter what is still pretty scary.
Sure.
Yeah, neither's good. Neither seems like a great option, if I'm being honest.
I'm going to go into your expertise for a moment, if you don't mind. Since we're kind of close to the end-ish of this album.
Yes.
If you had to pair this with a fast food meal, what goes with Ride the Lightning?
Great question. I mean, it's kind of eclectic. Eclectic's the wrong word. It's electric. That's what I was trying to say. It's literally the title, Ride the Lightning. It's very high energy. I feel like it's gonna, you know, get you amped up. So for me, I'm thinking something spicy.
Yeah.
I'm thinking get a whole bunch of wings from Wingstop. You know, go with your heat level of preference. I'll take it up to three or four peppers. I'll go pretty spicy. Get yourself some fries and get yourself some cheese sauce to cool those fries off.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
You're making me like the album more.
So this song, Creeping Death, it's all biblical. It's all about the plagues of Egypt. And so it's like, you know, again, one of those, it's one of those like, it's a thematic thing you'll see come up in metal a lot is biblical stuff.
I was not expecting Metallica to be as illusion heavy as it seems to be. I kind of just associate it with thrasher kids that I was scared of in high school.
By thrasher kids, do you mean kids in thrasher shirts?
You know that thrasher magazine shirts did not exist at that point, or at least were not popular.
Oh yeah. That's true. They're very popular now.
But yeah, to have the Hemingway and then a bunch of Bible stuff.
Right.
It's a bit more intelligent than I expected.
I think I also associated them with like, and this may just be my bias because they were more popular. I think I just kind of assumed they were a more basic metal band.
Well, I think a lot of that No, it absolutely does. And I think a lot of that comes from their big breakthrough album, which was a little bit more, you know, basic. I mean, like, Inner Sandman is like, it's what? It's just about a small boy going to sleep. You know, it's just like, it's not. And then they have like one of their songs on Metallica. Metallica is like literally just like a pro-America song, which is such a break from everything they've done. That they've just got why is the title escaping me right now? It's like, it's not Love It or Leave It, but it's that kind of shitty sort of attitude.
Okay.
Yeah, they've got I'll look it up right now. But yeah, and you know, that was the album right after One. So One comes out, and that's just like one of the most, you know, it's so anti-war, so anti-imperialism, anti-America, and then they have they literally have a song that it's called "Don't Tread on Me."
Oh wow, geez.
That's on the nose.
Yeah, it really kind of blows.
What are they reacting to at that point?
I have no idea. I guess it's just kind of like it would have been, I don't think it would have been recorded during the Gulf War, but I guess it's just probably that whole like Reagan Republicanism just kind of got everywhere. And I think Metallica also became more politically conservative as they got more famous and richer. So that may have also been a part of that, you know?
That tracks with people being rich. Yeah. Interesting. Are they conservative now? Do you know?
I don't know. You know, I don't know a ton about their politics, but you would infer. I mean, it seems like James Hetfield is kind of like a guy who's into guns and hunting. You know, and Lars is obviously kind of like a guy who cares about money more than anything.
Clearly.
So I think those are kind of the main two Metallica members, the guys who've been fixtures with the band since the beginning. I think they inform its identity the most.
Yeah.
I don't know. I also think they're not like actively political, really.
Yeah, that makes sense. Interesting.
This is going to be out of character for me,
mm-hmm.
but like this breakdown part is kind of fun. I like that.
I like this with a question mark at the end.
As somebody who was also given nightmares from one of their music videos, I can now admit.
I also, because I'm the one that has Spotify open, I see a 2016 album, Hardwired to Self-Destruct. The cover of that is very scary. I'm a little scared by it. It's like all mutated faces. I assume it's their faces all mushed into one. I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah, that was one of their, I think that was their, that's their most recent studio album, which I haven't really listened to much.
Oh, it's a scary cover. So from the cover, I don't suggest it. It is spooky season, so sure.
Had they slowed down a lot, like in terms of producing, or were they touring a lot more, or how was that working before the world shut down?
Yeah,
I think as far as studio albums, their output slowed quite a bit as they got bigger and toured more, and there haven't been a ton in the 21st century, though they've still put out a few. That one, I think that album kind of was less discussed, I think partly from a timing standpoint, because I think it came out like just basically almost at the same time as the 2016 election.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, no one was really talking about anything else.
Right.
By the way, that album that song we just listened to, Creeping Death, is also, I just want to note real quick, that's a fixture of their live shows. Like, that's like that's one they'll always play. And, you know, they have this part where it's this breakdown part, part of what Ramsey was referencing of die by my hand, creep across the land, killing a firstborn man, like that part. And while that's going, the crowd chants along, die, die, die.
That's pretty sick, actually.
Yeah, it's honestly awesome. And then you reach a point and you sometimes throw in a motherfucking die. You feel like a real bad kid.
Yeah. A real bad kid. this is the final song.
Oh, wow. It does really fly when they're there's only 8 tracks to mention.
Yeah.
And this is one of their shorter albums. This is the Call of Cthulhu. I got a lot of Cliff Burton influence in this songwriting, and this one was. Call of Cthulhu. Taken from H.P. Lovecraft. So yeah, another reference there.
These guys love books.
They do. I think a lot of that comes from Led Zeppelin, right? I'm less familiar with Led Zeppelin, but Led Zeppelin, I think, had so much like literature and high fantasy kind of worked into their lyricism.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because it feels like a lot of bands took cues from that. Because I feel like, I'm sure other bands did that before then. But yeah, I kind of love. Does Rush do that too?
I think so.
Yeah, Rush does that to some degree. Rush is a lot of. What's interesting about Rush is that it's. So much of it was written by the late great Neil Peart.
Right.
So many of their lyrics, and he was a weird like libertarian for much of his life. So a lot of it is like Ayn Rand stuff, which is really it's like about it's about it rugged individualism and not being part of a collective. Not great.
Don't love that.
Yeah.
You're Canadian. Settle down, man.
That's rough. Interesting. Is this, I don't think I already asked this, is this your favorite Metallica album?
I go back and forth with this one and Justice for All.
Okay.
They're both good, and Justice for All, I feel like, has some maybe some higher highs, but I think as an album, I like Ride the Lightning overall. And like I said earlier, a lot of, I think, hardcore Metallica fans will say that Master of Puppets is the best, and it's hard to argue against that as an album, but it just personal preference. Yeah, I think I'd say this one.
Interesting. This, I have liked this more than I expected. I don't know where. I don't think I'm going to go become a huge Metallica fan tomorrow or something, because I don't know where listening to this would like fit into my life, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But I have enjoyed this more than I thought I would. Not that I thought I was going to hate it, but like the skill level, if nothing else, I'm like, damn, that's actually very fucking impressive and cool. So I don't know. That is not what I expected.
Yeah, I mean, they're, you know, you have like these guys are all great musicians, and I think the songwriting is pretty creative. If you ever, you know, tried to teach yourself any of these songs on guitar or bass or drums, it would, you know, take some doing.
I should have started at the beginning of quarantine if I was going to do that.
Yeah. Your neighbors would love you.
On a ukulele, no less?
Yeah. Fine. Everyone left New York according to the news anyway, so no one would hurt you.
I've heard that, yeah.
It's dead here, in case you didn't hear. Interesting.
Nick, did you branch into Lovecraft after reading this?
Not a ton. I mean, we messed around with the H.P. Lovecraft pen and paper RPG, which is actually, it was called Call of Cthulhu. This one is spelled wrong. I don't know if it's for, I can't imagine it was for rights reasons. I think they may have just made that creative decision to spell it with a K instead of a C, C-T-H. But I never really read the short stories much. I do think that mythos is cool, even though the man seems like he was reprehensible.
Yeah, not a great guy.
This is totally unrelated, but I scrolled down further in the images, and there's a picture from Revolver of Metallica when this album came out, standing in front of the background of like the lightning. And they all look so fucking cool.
Yeah. They're cool as hell.
Every single one has long hair. Lars straight up has bangs that I wish I could pull off. And they're all in like black head to toe.
Do they have sleeves? I'm picturing no sleeves.
One guy is in a leather vest. No sleeves. So leather vest plus tank top. James is in like a black button-up shirt that's like undone, like a little sexy wise. Lars seems to have a belt made out of bullets. The other guy is just in a buttoned-up denim, like dark denim jacket. They look real cool. I like genuinely look like a cool 80s band.
And that, I think, is just like everyday wear in that era.
Yeah.
I think the...
Lars's jacket's a little weird. I'm noticing now. It's got like gray shoulder pads. A little weird. But anyway, still cool.
I definitely wanted to be that cool as a kid, and I think that's part of the appeal of these bands. It's also this kind of metal was kind of a response to glam rock.
Yeah.
And you know, glam rock, I even though I was into some bands like Poison, I still always thought it was kind of uncool. And these guys seemed like more like authentic, like these guys are hardcore. These guys are real metal. They're not just pretending. They're just not just doing metal cosplay.
Okay, now I'm just finding more different pictures of them during this era, and they literally look so cool in all of them.
Yeah.
Like the outfit James is wearing in this other one, I think I wear this outfit. It's like ripped up blue jeans, like it's a white Misfits t-shirt. And a leather jacket. Like, I swear to God, I have this outfit.
I'm expecting go ahead, Nick.
Heather, were you into the Misfits?
Yeah, a little bit. I'm not like a huge fan, but like I do like the Misfits.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, they just have some truly iconic songs, so.
Right.
I know their logo.
It's a great logo.
Heather, I'm expecting you to break in a third time and just say, okay, so I've just accidentally set them as my iPhone background.
No, I'm on my computer. Maybe my desktop background.
Okay.
No, okay. That I found that those were the main cool pictures. They had two very cool outfit photo shoots. So I am jealous of the bangs, though. My hair is too curly. I can't do it.
The hair was such a big part of their identity, to the point where when they had the album Load that came out after, that was their album after Metallica, after their Black Album, and they all cut their hair in advance of that album, and it was like a big thing, and it caused a lot of fans to be like, what the fuck is this? I'm out.
Oh, wow.
I'm in this for the hair.
That's like the least metal conversation I can imagine, though. The band deciding together to all cut their hair.
Right, yeah.
That's such a lame conversation to have to, like, have in a band meeting. Okay, like, band meeting. Agenda item number one, cutting our hair. Like, what? But, yeah, it's because that is, I think that's also why those pictures threw me off so much, because all my memories of them are, like, 90s Metallica, which is, like, James is kind of ripped, and, like, they have short hair and not the, like, more glam metal looking type guys. That was it. That's the whole album.
That's it.
That was quite an outro there. The classic lull you in and then hit you with a very loud noise all of a sudden.
Yeah. I feel like I already kind of said what I think about it. Ramsey, how was that for you?
I was very surprised at how I felt about this album. It was maybe I'm just more mature now and can handle it. I was very surprised.
I was
far less scared. What you said about the skill level is the main thing that stood out to me. Even down to, like, I know I'm showing my nerdiness here, but like, they're referencing literature. It's not just talking about, like, I just assumed it was going to be a lot of screaming about the devil or something.
Right.
Which is an illusion, I suppose, but not the kind I'm here for. This was a lot better than I expected.
Same.
Hey, I'll take it.
It's rare. It's rare that both of us agree it was better than we expected. So good work.
It's rare I'm ever associated with anything that someone says is better than they expected. So pretty excited about that.
Yeah, this has definitely changed what I think of when I see that Metallica logo. It is definitely a cooler thing than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, the music's not going to be for everybody, but I think it's impressive what they're able to pull off, and I think it has a little bit more depth than a lot of people would assume.
I think that's definitely I feel like what was changing my viewpoint is there is just more to it than like wah-wah-wah-wah-wah guitars and, to Ramsey's point, the devil.
To Ramsey's point, the devil.
Ramsey's favorite literary character, the devil.
That's right.
Cool. Well, thanks for bringing us, Nick. This to us, Nick.
Of course. Thank you for having me. What a treat. It's such a delight to discuss this.
Is there anything you'd like to plug before we go?
Chain Restaurant Podcast, Doughboys with Mike Mitchell, Video Game Podcast, How Did This Get Played with Matt Apodaca and Heather Ann Campbell. Check out either of those if you want to hear me talk some more. And hey, watch Earth to Ned on Disney Plus. It's a giant puppet alien made by the Jim Henson Corporation, and they've got some amazingly talented puppeteers and artisans who made it all come to life. I got to write some jokes for it, and it was a lot of fun.
I mean, it sounds delightful.
It is. Yeah, those are all wonderful things, and our listeners should definitely check those out. Heather, how about you?
You can find me online at Heather Shea, S-H-A-E. That's basically it. I didn't write any TV shows. How about you, Ramsey?
You can find me on Twitter and all the other social medias at Ramsey ESS. You can subscribe to our podcast at ifyourlistening.com. You can give us a review on iTunes. You can find our custom playlists and our picks of the week over there.
Wow. Great.
I think we did it. Amazing. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.